ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The Epstein scandal is one of the biggest in living memory.
The story the files tell is one of base corruption that stains all it touches.
So why does Donald Trump want to pretend it doesn't exist?
It's pretty boring stuff. It's sordid, but it's boring.
Oh, okay, well, I guess we shouldn't worry about it then. I'm Matt Bevan, and my show, if you're listening, is rarely sordid and never boring. New episodes on ABC Listen every Tuesday and Thursday.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has endorsed the United States and Israel's joint strikes in Iran, saying Australia stands with the Iranian people. The foreign minister has sidestepped questions about the legality of the operations, saying it was for the US and Israel to explain and suggesting the government wouldn't anticipate Australia participating in the future. But Shadow Defence Minister James Patterson has indicated the Liberals would support Australia assisting if it is in the national interest. So, as Parliament returns for another sitting fortnight, the conflict in the Middle East is set to dominate the agenda. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Jacob Greber.
And Jacob, it's lovely to have you back on the Monday pod with me after your travels through New South Wales, Victoria, and everywhere else you've been. But really, there is only one story in the world, really, and I mean that, and that is the US and Israel launching strikes on Iran. Absolutely extraordinary scenes. I must say, I know it was foreshadowed that it was possible, but I was genuinely shocked at the scale of this. It's been dubbed Operation Fury. It came, you know, after months of some speculation. There was a military build-up. I thought maybe he was just messing with people's minds. You know, the president is unpredictable. Trump says the aim is to ensure Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon. But the big question now we're dealing with is this really about regime change? There's a reason for that. Iran's supreme leader was killed in the strikes, obviously targeted and deliberately. There's now already, we're recording this on a Monday morning, three US personnel that have been killed. But I want to go to some of our domestic response because, Jacob, Australia's response is different to the 12-day war, where Australia was, I think, a lot more careful, talking about de-escalation. I don't hear that same sort of tone now. Why has it changed?
I definitely think you're right. It has changed. It's got some interesting nuance that we can unpack. I think it suits the government and the Prime Minister in particular because the regime in Iran has been directly implicated in domestic acts of, I guess you'd call them, attempted terrorism, targeting the Jewish community in Australia. The Albanese government threw out the ambassador last year. So we're already, in a sense, in this fight. And I kind of use those words deliberately because I know there's a lot of language that we're not. I think that's fanciful.
Why is it fanciful?
I guess the first thing is it suits the government to talk about why it welcomes the decapitation of the regime and it wants the people, you know, it's thinking for the Iranian people or praying for them or whatever the language it's using. I'm not quite sure what that means in practical terms, but we stand with the Iranian people. Sure. But they haven't gone as far as saying, well done, Netanyahu, well done, Donald Trump. Mm. They've gone a long way short of that. And I think that's the interesting thing here about this whole positioning of the government around these strikes. We can talk about it at length, but the idea that we are not involved, you've got to listen to the language very carefully. Penny Wong says not directly involved.
Yes.
And Richard Miles, very interestingly, when he was asked this morning by our colleague Sally Sara whether we're involved via the US bases, he said no. Now, that's raising eyebrows because anyone who knows the history of these joint bases right back to the 1970s, right back through the 80s, knows the way they're enmeshed. And the idea that they're not involved in this conflict is really, really hard to accept at face value. Now, I understand why the government's doing it, because I guess in its sense it's not saying it was involved, as in sitting at the table with the US administration, with the Israelis, and pushing go. It's not that level of involvement, that's clear. But the idea that we're just nobodies, bystanders, no. My gut feel, anything I've ever read about this space tells me that, yeah, we're a bit player in a bigger conflict and we've been pulled into it.
Yeah, I think we've definitely been pulled into it. And then there is, I think it's worthy of sort of analysing, interpreting the critique of our being brought in. You know, some people have been saying, people from the left, let's be honest, the Greens, and some cranky Labor people, right? I mean, Doug Cameron's the most obvious.
Former senator, yeah.
And, you know, formerly, I don't know what the relationship's like these days. I don't think, I'm assuming not too amazing, but the formerly Anthony Albanese's mate, like, you know, Doug Cameron and Elbo know each other very well. And he's just been scathing, right, about our full-throated support for this, because that is unusual. If you look at other Western nations, they're not all saying this is the best thing ever, right? Canada is the most similar to us, I think, and it's interesting this week. Mark Carney, the Canadian Prime Minister, comes to Australia. That's just a coincidence, but timing is everything. And we are taking a very similar line. It's interesting because Canada is very critical, and, of course, there's been Barneys between Carney and Trump over trade. But on this question of the Iranian regime and its behaviour, there is some synergies. But I think it's really interesting to see what is a centre-left government and also a left-wing prime minister from the left, literally, who has taken on his base a few times now, and he seems comfortable in taking on his base, taking what is a line that I think is very controversial around the world, but is very controversial even in Australia, the idea of backing in a conflict that there are massive questions about the legality of. Like Penny Wong and Richard Miles, just to say, they both have skirted around the questions of legality. Wong basically saying that they should explain the United States and Israel. Like, you know, it's for them. But hang on a minute. Okay, you're asking for them. Well, we can't ask them, Penny Wong. We ask you because you've said you support it and you're an ally.
But this is why I actually don't agree that it's a full-throated endorsement.
Yes, I know you're saying
I think
that.
It's well short of that. And what you pointed to is exactly why I think that. It's up to Israel and the United States to explain the legality of this. In other words, the government is quite uncomfortable with this idea at the bottom of these strikes, which is that it's okay for a country to eliminate the head of state of another country. And yes, we can all agree that Iran has done many, many bad things. So the Iranian government, I should say, has done many bad things. It has exported terrorism around the world, including to this country. No question. So
there is absolutely no question. This is a hideous regime.
No one's going to shed tears. No one's going to shed tears. But we have, in essence, now found ourselves in lockstep with two countries that are operating very much outside the norms of international law as we've known them since World War II. And that's a really big deal. And the government will eventually have to come and sort of explain that nuance to us, because this probably isn't the first one of these type of events that we might get pulled into. And then I think the other thought that springs to mind for me is, what conditions have we put on any of this? You know, I think the intelligence build up, you could see the open source things about F-22s being parked in the Negev desert last week. You could see things were happening. We have people embedded with the Americans who I presume report back to the defense minister. I can't imagine how that wouldn't be the case. So they would have known exactly what was unfolding well ahead of time,
although when
in real
asked,
time. Yes, but that's different. Did Rubio ring him? Did Hegseth ring? Did Rubio ring
Penny? So the official briefing didn't happen.
Right. So that's sure. But you still get the sense that we're just being pulled along here. And I think the politics is really interesting for the Prime Minister. And that was the other thought I had in mind. It feels super pragmatic from the government, the way they're handling this. It's different to the way he treated the proposition that Australia should join the Board of Peace. Remember that? Mm. That organization that's going to rebuild Gaza. We've kind of treated that like an offer from a drunken person in a full bar, and we've just sort of we've inched our way out of the bar, hoping they don't notice. But in this case, you know, we're really part of it.
So analyzing the politics, kind of give you my analysis. I'm basing it on a couple of conversations, obviously, with people who know, but also my own close watching of this for a long time. I feel like this is a very post-Bondi, post-targeting of the Jewish community response as well, and it does fit into that frame.
Hmm. But he still can't say, well done, Netanyahu.
Yeah, I don't know, Jacob. Has he said it? You are right that he hasn't said it, right? And there's politics there. We know why, you know, like Netanyahu is political poison in this country and many places.
And no friends of, you know, Albanese and Netanyahu have a very difficult relationship.
But, so, yeah, okay, he's not said that, but, you know, come on, we're all in. I don't think we're hedging.
We haven't sent... You know, we're not sending additional planes or people or anything like that. So I'm more in terms of he's happy about the fact that the Ayatollah has been removed from power. He's happy that this might open a door for regime change, although that's not the reason we're happy as a government. We're happy because we're concerned about the nuclear program in Iran. That's the real official reason that's given.
Yeah, because we can't be backing regime change.
Yeah, that's bad juju for a middle-sized power to be talking about any of that.
Also,
and it all backfires.
Let's go to that because Andrew Hastie did an interesting interview on the weekend. Now, Andrew Hastie obviously is interesting for so many reasons, but one of them being that he's like the main leadership rival to the new leader of the Liberal Party, Angus Taylor. He's also a former veteran in Afghanistan. So we're talking SAS, someone who I think does have skin in the game when it comes to this region. He's warned about forever wars, very interesting intervention, you know, and also that regime change doesn't work. So even the coalition...
Well, it certainly doesn't work with bombing and, you know, missiles.
No boots on the ground.
You need people to be there.
But even when there are boots on the ground...
And then it's still very... Yeah, right.
It's a vexed thing.
So his quote's really interesting, isn't it? We should read it out. As a veteran of the so-called forever wars, I'm very suspicious about regime change by force. So that's, I think, and this is also... an issue for Trump in the United States with the MAGA base is uncomfortable with the way this has unfolded. Marjorie Taylor Greene's been very loud, others as well. So Trump needs this to be quick. The Iranians need this to drag out as long as possible because it makes it politically at home in the constituency that Trump worries about the most. That becomes more problematic. He wants them to get to the negotiating table. He's already claiming that they want to talk. We'll see. Maybe, maybe not. So he needs it to be over fast. He needs it to be another Venezuela.
But it's not another Venezuela, though.
The Iranian regime, which is all powerful, has an incredible security apparatus. Talk to someone like Amin Sakal at the ANU. He thinks about a third of Iran's population is directly reliant on the current regime continuing to exist. There's a huge resistance to this falling apart internally because it's got more solid institutions perhaps than most bad countries that we deal with. And so it's not going to fall apart in a hurry. That's very difficult then politically for someone like Trump to sustain it. Now, how that plays out in Australia, I don't know. What do you think? If this becomes something that goes for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks rather than a quick and dirty where we all move on, you know, and forget about it by next Monday whatever the consequences,
evaporated.
We stop thinking about them. Yeah.
Mm. No, I'll tell you what I think. I think if we get drawn in at a military level and, you know, we haven't been yet, but if we are, then, of course, that does complicate things. But I think there are a few other elements too. Right now, there are scores of Australians stranded across the world, but also in the Middle East, where, of course, Iran is retaliating, and that means people are in genuine risk. So there are a lot of Australians and a lot of people also affected who are dual citizens or people with, you know, cultural backgrounds in that region who are there. Mm. So there's that problem. And then don't forget the economic consequences. We are constructing a budget right now. I'm not doing it, but you know what I mean, our government. Mm. And it is going to be affected by this global instability, the Strait of Hormuz, and the, you know, the kind of free trade and oil prices. This is all now going to be impacted.
What is it? 20% of the world's oil, I think, goes through that strait. China needs a lot of it, so they've got an interest in it getting through. What Americans and what the Trump administration can't afford is a big energy crisis. That is not something that he'll want in the lead up to the midterms. I think more interesting for the Australian government, remember when the Ukraine war started, very legitimately the Australian government, the new Labor government at the time, was able to say, look, this is caused by an event that we have no control over,
mm-hmm.
And we'll have to deal with it. And it resulted in energy bill relief and ad hoc measures. The government most recently has been under enormous pressure and criticism from people who say it's spending too much and that that is crowding out other parts of the economy, and that's the reason inflation has not come down and indeed is still above the band and we're now getting rate hikes. This event is another one of those events where they can say this is not of our doing. It's not even something we can directly control, and it might reopen the door for temporary relief in whatever form they might come up with. And it sort of muddies the politics of the inflation story in my mind, because it's at the moment the debate is very much, is the government to blame or not? That's a binary argument. Both sides have a view on it. I have a view on it. People will go at it. Now you've got this external factor. And the politics of that, then it muddies that clear division.
I agree with you that it muddies it, but I still think the way that politics works, you know, punters look at the polling that's sort of moving in this one nation direction.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think it gives the government leeway then to bring these sort of measures back?
Yes, but it doesn't give, you know, the public will still be cranky. You can do whatever measures
you want.
But
who do they blame? You think they'll blame the government?
Yeah, they always do. They're cranky. And it's been cumulative, some of the impacts of cost of living, essentially. So it can end in no way other than bad for the government, whether it likes it or not. That's my view. Look, Parliament's returning. It's back today. I'm in Canberra with you because I love coming here to hang out with you mainly.
Other than the big news, it's a big day for one person in particular, isn't it?
And who's that?
Angus Taylor. First day across the dispatch box. How does he take it to the government? I guess the issues today are not the most easy to quote-unquote score points on the government,
right,
because there is a bipartisanship around foreign policy and defence policy.
Yep.
But it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think that's right. So we'll be watching closely. But, yeah, not the most ideal first question time, because they're also, the government has taken a line that is broadly sort of the same as the coalition, so they can't go hard on the government on any of the international issues. They'll try and go the economy again, but, you know, everyone's eyes are on, obviously, this.
Mm. The more interesting stuff seems to be unfolding in the Senate, isn't it,
where there's
this sort of a motion against the US and Israeli strikes on Iran. Now, that's been put up and supported, I should say, by David Pocock, Lydia Thorpe, Greens, One Nation.
Mm.
And Wong has accused them of a political stunt and an unholy alliance between Senator Cash and the Greens Senator Shoebridge. Really interesting stuff unfolding in the Senate.
Yeah, that is a really unusual alliance, isn't it?
Yes.
like the government, it's not just rhetoric.
It's horseshoe,
aren't they?
Right.
Like,
right.
What's the game here for the coalition?
Well, to make life uncomfortable for the government.
Sure, but yeah. on this?
Yeah, let's see where that lands. We'll let you know.
It.
We'll let you know on
all
that
right.
one.
They're also set to censure, there's a censure motion drafted by Labor against Pauline Hanson too. That's over her comments that are widely rebuked, as they should be, that there are no good Muslims because, well, not only is it offensive, but fact check 101, not true. Okay, how that gets framed will play out and that'll be interesting too. But this week really
I can
is
tell
going
you that's
to
made even a lot of One Nation supporters uncomfortable.
Of course.
And I can tell you that from my trip through Farrah last week, where I spoke to a lot of One Nation supporters. And some of those communities in that electorate, and this is in southern western New South Wales, towns like Griffith are full of immigrants of very diverse backgrounds. And the One Nation supporters there were quite uncomfortable with some of that language that Pauline Hanson used.
Because it's so over the top that people think, what? It's obviously wildly illogical. It's illogical to even make the point. Now, Susan Lee has also, of course, officially quit Parliament, but we won't see her back again either.
She's not only not appearing in Parliament ever again, she won't be giving a valedictory speech.
She is done.
What she said in the courtyard the other day, that was her last statement, I guess, on the matter, until she does an interview with someone, I guess, one day. But in essence, that was the end of her political career. She's now kicked off this by-election. We'll have a lot more to say about that in coming weeks. But it's, sometimes politicians can leave on their own terms and they give those speeches and they can tie a nice bow around their careers and leave. This is not one of those.
No. And it'll be interesting to hear what her... She says she doesn't want to be in public life, but I've often found people can't resist the temptation. So it'll be interesting
to
hear
her insights.
It's so
interesting, isn't it? Some can do it. Like, I mean, I guess Julia Gillard's a great example. Oh, does very little.
She's the president of
she
it,
does very the president of the disappearing
I'm
prime minister's
zip
club.
It. Yeah, and I'm going to just intervene on other things that matter. Yeah, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Jacob, I did miss being face to face with you last week, so thanks for hanging out with me.
All the best. Thanks. It's great to be back face to face.
And that's it for Politics Now today. Tomorrow I'll be joined by Raph Epstein from ABC Radio Melbourne to bring you the latest. And if you have a question for us, please send a short voice note to theparty room at abc.net.au and Fran and I will endeavour to answer it. See ya.